plane according to his or her schedule, not yours. Just like in this meditation. So don't try and rush things. One of the stories from my first meditation teacher who was in Thailand. When he was a 5 or 6 year old boy, his father gave him some plants for the first time. Some seeds. He planted them in his garden. And because he was only 5 or 6 years of age, he would water them, and he was so impatient. You know, after 2 or 3 days, he could see nothing happen. So he asked his father. His father said, yeah, they're germinating under the ground. They're pushing up. They're probably getting very close to the surface of the soil now. Just wait another couple of days. You might see something. He was patient enough to wait for 2 more days, and sure enough, he saw small little seeds appearing just above the soil. So he started watering them twice a day, you know, becoming impatient. And when they're about 2 or 3 inches high, that's where he totally lost his patience. He decided to stretch them to make them grow quicker. And thereby he killed all of them. You cannot stretch plants to make them grow quicker. No more than you can stretch your meditation practice to make it go faster. So your job is to nurture your mind and your body, making peace, being kind, being gentle, and just watching these things happen. Growing by themselves. So little by little over this retreat, by practicing this present moment awareness and being silent, you'll find your awareness grows stronger and stronger. It's like you wake up. And for those of you who don't know the ancient Buddhist language, the word for Buddha does not mean enlightened, it means awakened. From the Pali verb bujati, to wake up. So it really does mean like a person who's woken up. And you can understand what that means, because even if you get out of the bed in the morning, when you first sort of crawl and stagger out of bed, you're not awake yet. Even when you come down here to meditate, you're not really awake. Even after a couple of days, in the middle of the day, you're not really awake. But when the meditation gets very strong, and the mindfulness becomes very powerful, when you can look in the toilet bowl and see amazing things, then you're awake. So it's amazing just how this mindfulness can get stronger and stronger. And that's the first task of these first few days, to rest the body, to have the mind becoming more and more still, not doing very much, so the mindfulness can increase. A basic rule of the nature of the mind, the two most important parts of your mind, that which knows and that which does. You know that which does, that's the thinking, the planning, the thing which initiates actions, which reacts to all the senses. The doing, active mind, that takes up so much of your energy, you haven't got much left for knowing, for mindfulness. So doing gets the first share, and knowing gets the leftovers. In this meditation, because you're doing very, very little, I ask you not to plan, not to figure out all the problems from the past, not to do very much at all. It means the energy you would normally waste by thinking, planning, worrying, all that energy is not wasted anymore. It's free to go into mindfulness, which is why the mind gets stronger and stronger, more and more awake, brighter and happier. So the less you do, the stronger your mindfulness, and the happier you are. And when your mindfulness gets strong enough, then you can carry on getting deeper into the meditation, becoming even more still. And I wanted to talk a little bit today about the breath meditation. Now, any of you have ever read the Anapanasati Sutta, the meditation on the breath, you will hear the Buddha actually say, this is the 118th sutta in the Majjhima Nikaya. I say all those numbers, I doubt anyone will check up on me, but if you do, it's right there. There you will find the Buddha saying explicitly, anyone who practices the Anapanasati also at the same time fulfills the 4 Satipatthanas. And anyone who fulfills the 4 Satipatthanas also fulfills the enlightenment factors. So Anapanasati is a complete practice in and of itself. Please never say, oh, I'll do Anapanasati first, and then I'll do Satipatthana. That is not according to the teachings of the Buddha. Satipatthana is the four foundations of mindfulness. Satipatthana and the Anapanasati, the four foundations of mindfulness and breath meditation, are one and the same. So says the Buddha. And you can't argue with the Buddha. You can argue with me, you can argue with someone else, but it's very tough to argue with the Buddha when it's there in black and white. So you don't do breath meditation and then do vipassana, for goodness sake. Breath meditation is vipassana. It is everything. So, and it was the teaching or the meditation practice which the Buddha used to become enlightened. So he's got his stamp of approval. This is the Buddha's method to become enlightened. And now it's there for you. And if the Buddha can do it, why not you? So, what do you do? Basically nothing. But now I'm going to say what actually happens. Because when you're in the present moment, when the mind becomes very, very still, when you're sitting down, there's no thoughts, no past, no future, what should you watch? Sometimes people ask me that. In the present moment, what should I watch? What do you mean by the present moment? What should I do when I'm silent? What happens? It's not what you decide to do, it's what happens. Everything else is still. You're sitting quietly, the body's not moving, no thoughts to think about, no past, no future. What's the only thing left which is moving? Your breath is the only thing left which is moving. Which is why, if you practice this meditation method, you don't even need to go looking for the breath. When you settle down, sitting down, the body calms down, there's no aches or pains to be bothered with, no past, no future, no thoughts, the only thing left is the breath. And that is the way I meditate. I just sit down, let go, relax, no past, no future, sort of let go of all this thinking. And then the breath is just there. The reason is it's the only thing which is remaining. To understand this, just basic physiology of the human brain, your brain is only wired to notice things which change. If there's a constant noise in the background, you will not hear it. If it's a feeling in the body which doesn't change, you will not notice it. Even I like telling the story when I went to a Zen retreat as a young student, because in those days you go to any retreat you could find, you didn't have much choice. So I went to a Zen retreat and I was told to sit down and face the wall with my eyes open. That was a really weird thing because I was always used to closing my eyes. But I was willing to try anything as a student, so I sat there watching this wall with my eyes open, and after 15 or 20 minutes something weird happened. The wall disappeared. Now that was really weird. But you know, when you were a student, this was in the late 60s, early 70s, you liked weird stuff. You know, first of all, you thought maybe they put something in the breakfast, some illegal drug or something, because it was really weird. But there it was. You're sitting there and like, hey, there's no wall anymore. Now that is not a meditation attainment. It's not something you're going crazy. It's nature. You try that. If you are still enough and you're not thinking and not distracting yourself with past or future, you just stare at a wall for 10 or 15 minutes, it will vanish. And the reason is your brain can only notice things which change. There's some efficiency mechanism in the brain, just like if nothing changes on your computer screen, what happens? It automatically turns off. It's exactly the same thing. Your brain, if there's nothing is changing, there's something inside there, there's nothing really to do, this is not a problem, you know, let's keep the energy for some other time. So you just don't see anymore. And that's the nature of your brain. If nothing moves, if nothing changes, it turns off. This is not important. So the brain stops looking. You experience that often. Actually, every time you meditate, most of you. Because when you close your eyes, now what do you see? Inside of my eyelids. But because the inside of my eyelids doesn't change, after a few seconds it just turns off. So I'm not seeing anymore. I'm not seeing blackness, I'm not seeing the inside of my eyelids, I'm not seeing. The whole sense is flipped off. Now that is important to understand for meditation. That's why you sit still. And where you get your body nice and comfortable. So there's no aches, no pains, nothing to scratch, no cough, no sneezes. And that means nothing going on in your body. So it can vanish. It's why we close our eyes. So the eyes can turn off. They vanish. It's why we try and keep it reasonably quiet. So you don't bang the doors, you don't make too much noise when you come in and go out. There can be like noise of traffic in the background. That doesn't matter. We have an air conditioner. If it gets too hot, we can turn the air conditioner on, air conditioner off, because it's a hum in the background, which is constant. At first you notice it, after a few minutes you can't notice it anymore, because it's not changing. That's not a problem. It's only when there's a change in sound that can disturb you. But if there's no sound at all, or the sound is constant, basically it disappears. Smell. That's one of the reasons why in meditation centers in Asia, they light lots of incense. Because if people eat too many beans, or they don't wash that day, or they don't brush their teeth, there is a smell. But when you light lots of incense, you can't smell anything anymore other than incense. So you can always tell the hygiene of a Buddhist country by the amount of incense they have to in the temple to mask all the smells. But because we're all clean living over here, we don't light much incense, if any at all. But what that means, after a while, you can't smell anything. And you can't taste anything. So because everything is not moving, not changing, the five senses turn off. You're calming them down until they disappear. But the one which is hardest to calm down, you're breathing. That's always moving. So that's why the breath meditation is the way to turn off this last of the five senses, the body. Number one, for those of you who've done breath meditation before, I have to go through this. It's almost like meditation housekeeping. Please do not look at the breath at the tip of your nose. Do not watch the breath at your belly. Just allow the breath to be made known wherever it wants to be made known. You don't go looking at the body, you go looking for the breath. Because if you look at the tip of the nose, many people who did that type of meditation, focusing on the tip of the nose, they complained about headaches. And it took me a while to figure out why on earth you're getting a headache when you're supposed to be relaxing. And the reason was, when you focus on a part of the body with your mind, so you focus on the tip of the nose, you also focus with your eyes. So I'm going to keep my eyelids open. This is what most people do when they focus on the tip of the nose, breathing in at the tip of the nose. If you watch my eyeballs, they're so cross-eyed now. If I keep doing this for 10 minutes, my God, I'm going to get a headache. And that's why many people do this for 1 hour. No wonder they get headaches. That's really stupid. Don't focus on anywhere. Because what your mind looks at, the eyes tend to look at too. So don't do that. Number two, focusing on the belly. That might work at home when you leave this retreat. But if you try focusing down here at 7, 8 o'clock in the evening, that area is so close to your stomach, you'll start to feel hungry. Oh, I want something to eat. Because they're too close together. You don't need to do that. All you need to do is to watch your breath. And for those who've never meditated before, they're the easy ones because they haven't been exposed to all these complicated instructions. I just ask them, close your eyes, breathe in and out 3 times. At the end of the 3rd out-breath, open your eyes. And everybody can do that. Even kids 5 years of age can do that. And then I ask them, once they've completed that exercise, how did you know? You just breathe in once, out once, in twice, out twice, in 3 times, out 3 times. How did you know that? You know, they don't need to sort of give me a written explanation. You know you've been breathing in. You know you've been breathing out. And that is what you watch in breath meditation. Whatever it is. which tells you, yes, you've just done an in-breath. Yes, you've just done an out-breath. That's all you watch. So you don't watch anywhere, you just watch the in-breath and out-breath. And if you do the practice of just being in the present moment, being silent and just waiting, you find out the breath comes to you and you just know the breath. The second thing with doing breath meditation is that too often whatever we watch, as I said earlier, we tend to control. Remember that exercise with your saliva? As soon as you start focusing on your saliva, you try and control it, it becomes very, very uncomfortable. Same with the breath. When you go focusing on the breath, it's not a natural breath. You've interfered with it, which is one of the reasons why you first try and watch the breath. It's always a bit harsh, a bit rough. After a while you can relax and it becomes back to your natural breath. But doing the meditation of just being in the present moment of silence and just waiting, when the breath comes up then, it usually is pretty soft and natural. It's important your breathing is soft and natural, because if it is unpleasant, the mind automatically will go somewhere else. You cannot control your mind in the sense of saying, stay still, don't go anywhere, stay with the breath, because your mind will rebel. So you have to tempt the mind. This is beautiful, this is nice. And when the breath is very relaxing and very peaceful, then it's very easy to stay with the breath because the mind is enjoying itself. So what we do in the Anapanasati Sutta, the first and second stage of Anapanasati is being able to know the in-breath as long or short, whatever it is. And this is where sometimes people start doing these mantras with the breath. You know, you can do buddho, breathing in, bud, breathing out, ho. Or you can do something like, you know, breathing in, peace, breathing out, letting go. Or you can do the all-Australian mantra, breathing in, shut, breathing out, up. Shut up. Or you can do the Indonesian mantra, breathing in, mati, breathing out, pasti. I would like that for sure. You can do any of those things, but what it really does, it gets you something to hang on to with your breathing. It makes it a little bit more interesting. So those become like the first two stages of breath meditation. So you have some fun with the breath. And you may have known that I've been innovating, not only doing kangaroo walking meditation, but also doing things like backwards breath meditation. If you haven't heard of the meditation technique called backwards breath meditation, if I ask you to breathe in and out three times, okay, I have to do this now to teach you what backwards breath meditation is. So when I say go, you don't need to change your posture. When I say go, I want you to close your eyes and breathe in and out three times. Go. End of the third breath, open your eyes. Okay, that's only three, not four, five, six. Now, every one of you, almost for sure, start with an in-breath and then an out-breath. In, out, in, out, in, out. Now I want you to close your eyes when I say go, and then breathe out first and then in. Out, in, out, in. And on the third in-breath, open your eyes. Okay? Go. When you start on the out-breath, and the next is the in-breath, we call that backwards breath meditation. It's actually totally different than when you start with the in-breath. It's weird, but it's true. So if you get bored watching your breath, in, out, in, out, try the other way around. Out, in, out, in. A little bit of playing around like that really helps. It makes it interesting at the very beginning. The Buddha's way of doing that is say, find out whether it's long or whether it's short. You can do counting at this time if you really want to. That's just getting your mind engaged with your breathing, if you really have to. But the best way is just let it happen by itself. And the third stage is seeing the whole body of the breath, which doesn't mean your physical body. It's very well explained by the Buddha in the Anapanasati Sutta, where he said the breath is counted as a body. It's seeing the whole breath, which means from the very beginning of an in-breath, you see it when it starts. You see it all the way, one in-breath. You see where it reaches its peak and then starts to fade away. And that last sensation before the in-breath stops. And then there's a pause. A pause when the in-breath is finished and the out-breath is yet to begin. And then you're there to see the dawn of the out-breath. When it just begins as a tiny little movement in your tummy. And then the breath, out-breath gets strong. When it reaches its maximum amplitude and then begins to fade away. Until the last little molecules of out-breath leave your mouth and the out-breath has stopped. And then there's another pause. If you want to practice that stage of meditation, a good trick is to find out which is the longest. The pause between the out-breath and the in-breath, or the pause between the in-breath and the out-breath. Which is the longest? This just gives you a little exercise, so you really have to be aware and interested to see, just as the breath becomes not just breathing in, out, just see the whole of one in-breath, the whole of one out-breath. It means your awareness has to become much stronger. And you can't force your mindfulness, it has to become natural. If you try and force it and you say, right, I've got this stage, I'm going to get the next stage, and use effort, that effort will destroy the tranquility, destroy the happiness, and the mind will go off somewhere else. So remember, these aren't something you're going to achieve, it's just something which happens. You become aware of the full breath, from beginning to end. You're filling the mind up with the breath, so there's no chance for any other sensations to come in. There's no room left. And as you see the whole breath, then quite naturally it just calms down and becomes smoother. And smoother, and smoother. This beautiful breath, not but just smooth out. Breathing in and breathing out. Just until the in-breath and the out-breath is so smooth, you can hardly distinguish between the two of them. It's just breath. Moving. That's that fourth stage. Because everything is calming down, it becomes very peaceful. Sometimes people fall asleep at this stage. They go dull. They blank out. And the reason is, as I mentioned earlier, because you're not focusing on the delight of being at peace. It's amazing just how people can take peace for granted. How they can just be living in a beautiful place and not notice it. So in this meditation, it's not that you should be afraid of happiness, but you should actually cultivate it. To look at the delight of peace. To enjoy spending all these days in a quiet place. To delight in the fact that you can be by yourself in your own room, nothing to do, no one to impress, just to be. Oh, what bliss. So if you can start to appreciate the quiet things in life, if you can see the delight in peace, then when the breath becomes very quiet, it becomes a very delightful and happy breath. That is one of the most important stages in meditation. To start experience the happiness of meditation. Just sitting here, breathing in, breathing out. Having just a wonderful time. Remember earlier I mentioned, even when the body relaxes, appreciate it, delight in the happiness of the body. When it's free from aches and pains or whatever else. know what it's like. I remember once, years and years ago, being so sick with a fever in the Thai hospital. And that was a terrible time, because that was, what was it, 1975, I think. And this was a third world hospital. Actually, fourth world, probably. Because the third world hospitals were in Bangkok. This was in Ubon, in the warps of Thailand. And I had typhus fever. We didn't know what it was at the time. Everyone thought it was typhoid. And you were in this hospital with about, you know, one of these old wards, six beds on either side. And when I got there, I had a drip in and felt like death. At 6 o'clock, the nurse at the station disappeared. 7 o'clock, the replacement hadn't come. 8 o'clock, still no one had come. And I asked the monk in the next bed, should we do something? The night nurse hasn't turned up. And then he said to me, in this hospital, there are no night nurses. If anything happens in the evening or at night time, it's just unlucky karma. That was not reassuring. I wanted to go home. And that was it. 12, 13 hours every day, there was no one there to look after you. You just had to take your chances. And that was not even the worst part of it. The worst part of it is because you had some sort of fever which they didn't know about. The nurses would inject you in the morning and the afternoon with this cocktail of antibiotics, hoping that one of them might work. And the trouble was, this was almost 40 years ago, the needles in those days are nothing like the ones we have these days. These were the old ones. You'd always recycle many, many times. So the really fat, not like the thin, nice ones these days, really fat and not that sharp. And I'm absolutely sure they would have used them in Bangkok, first of all, and then shipped them up to the poor provinces, where they use them for ordinary people, and last of all, for the monks, because we're supposed to be the tough guys. And they were very blunt, because this is no exaggeration. The nurse who would come in morning and afternoon to inject me in the bum, she was not like one of these Australian nurses, petite. She was like a water buffalo, like a quai. Really strong muscles. And she had to be, because she never injected you, never once stabbed. That's the only way you can get in. God, that hurt. And even though I was a monk, and even though I had a lot of compassion, not for that nurse. Gee, I hated that nurse. Every time she came in, oh God, not again. That really hurt. So that was, you know, what you had to deal with, you know, in those days, in sort of the northeast of Thailand as a forest monk, and nothing really, really worked. Now, where was I going with this story? Something to do with the breath. Forgot totally where I was. I enjoy the stories. So just like you, you've probably forgotten everything else which I said this morning, but you remember that story. Because it's funny. So yeah, just the breath becomes nice and smooth. Yeah, what was I getting there? Anyway. The fever and, the delight, yes. Because what happened, when that fever broke, and I walked out of that hospital, I felt so happy. You never feel as healthy as when you've just overcome a sickness. It's because I could appreciate being healthy and being able to walk and having a bit of energy. And a week or two later, it's just normal. You don't delight in health anymore. You just take it for granted. That's the problem. It's the same when you have a beautiful breath. It's just so peaceful, so nice, you don't delight in it. Which means you can't progress in your meditation. So when the breath is nice and peaceful, deliberately try and find some delight. And one of the ways of doing that is take your attention away from the breath and put it on your mouth and smile. Fake a smile. Because when you smile in here, the mind also looks for happiness. So only for a couple of seconds you smile, then straight away you can appreciate the delight in the breath. is there for you. Secondly, throughout the day, smile at things, smile at each other. You're not supposed to speak to each other because it's noble silence, but you can smile at each other. So often people complain, oh, this is so miserable. We don't mind not speaking to each other, but I look at someone and they look so miserable. For goodness sake, don't make people depressed. After a few more days, someone will commit suicide because, oh, no one smiles and they're not talking to me. Ugh. So smile more. And that will transfer into your meditation because you have a happy mind. When the breath comes up, it will look delightful. People who are too serious, who haven't got that fun, who don't actually look for happiness, never see it. Why is it like a country like Australia, a very wealthy country, never suffered from the GFC, a lot of people commit suicide? A lot of people are depressed. Why, for goodness sake? There's so much happiness and joy here. It's because they've got this fault-finding mind, always complaining, always seeing what's wrong, never sort of laughing. Someone tells a joke, like they're so superior, I'm not going to laugh. I'm not going to laugh on principle. I'm not going to laugh. It's all right to laugh. Laugh even at a bad joke. You know, don't worry about the joke. It's good for you to laugh and be happy and get this joy coming up in the mind, which is energy. And when you start to have a happy life, when you play around, for goodness sake, don't always sit in the same place. Sit somewhere else. Sit up here if you want. I won't mind. Turn around and sit the other way. You know, just for fun. Because when you have that fun in your meditation, you find you're looking for fun, and when the breath starts to get calm, it actually becomes delightful. When you eat, do weird things. You know, get some rice, put a banana in the middle, standing up. Whatever it is, play around. Because that playing around means you're engaging with life, you're looking for fun, and when you actually get that breath, the breath is delightful. And that is an important stage in meditation. Because once you get to the delightful breath, you're breathing and it's just so nice and so happy. Those are the fifth and sixth stages of Anapanasati. Breathing in, you experience joy, breathing out, joy, breathing in, happiness, out, happiness. This is an important stage. You're really enjoying this meditation. And I see that because people who meditate, they've got a smile on their face. And that makes me so happy. So I know, good, you're getting it. And it also means you're sitting here happily for half an hour, 2 hours, 5 hours, happy little meditator. You're not forcing yourself, you're just enjoying yourself. And usually the acid test is when it's time for lunch. No, I don't want lunch. And when that happens, I see someone, don't turn up for lunch because they're sitting here. Brilliant. Now you're starting to get some nice meditation. So you can imagine how delightful it is. You can't fake it. If you try to fake it, no, lunch will win every time. But if it's real, you're really having a lot of happiness. You just love staying here. And get lunch later on. Or get some cheese, I don't care. You're having that much joy. That is an important part of the meditation. When that happens. Of course, that happened to me earlier. That hooked me straight away. I never realized that meditation would be so much fun. Sitting here just as happy as you could be, hour after hour, totally satisfied. Because it is the happiness which is the glue. It sticks your mind onto the meditation. You can't force it. You can't push your mind onto the breath. The breath has to be attractive. It pulls you to it. Because it's so delightful and happy. When that starts to happen, then you're off, you're away. And I don't have to teach you anything. It just happens. What happens, the only thing I have to teach you is don't be afraid, don't be excited, don't stand in the way, don't do anything. Just let it all evolve like a snowball rolling downhill. Because what happens next? You're sitting there just having a wonderful time watching the breath. It gets so enjoyable, so soft and so peaceful. But because the breath isn't moving, it vanishes. It's gone. Everything calms down. That's the eighth and ninth, no, sorry, one, two, three, four, five, six, seventh and eighth stages of Anapanasati, just the whole thing calms down and vanishes. And the next thing which happens is where you get into the really nice stuff, the juicy part of meditation. Your body is totally gone. You can't feel anything. No aches, no pains. Health-wise, that's when a lot of healing happens, but that's only the free gift with every packet. That's not the main course. What happens next is beautiful lights in the mind. The five senses have stopped, and the sixth sense, the mind, the citta, is all that remains. That's the first time you start to see, you know, a reflection of, you know, who you think you are. This mind, beautiful light in the mind. Those nimittas can be very complicated at first. But the best ones are the simple ones. It doesn't matter if you see a light, vision or whatever, great. Whatever, as long as it's beautiful, as long as it's peaceful, as long as it's delightful, yeah. But the best ones, I'll say more about these later on, the best ones are these beautiful lights which just come up. So gorgeous. Because you've got lots of happiness. And that is called the ninth stage of Anapanasati. It's just what happens. Now, I have to be very careful now, because when I start talking about this, people get very interested. I want this too. Yeah, I'm good as everybody else. We've got a few days left. Yeah, this is now my goal. I'm going to see one of these lights. Remember, when you want anything, you can't relax. You can't be happy. So please, stop all the wanting. If you really are to experience these beautiful states, just have to follow the instructions, just be peaceful, be patient, just be in the moment, and it will come to you when it's ready. You can't stretch the plants. So this just happens, and just beautiful light comes into the mind. Please, 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 don't get excited. Please don't be afraid. Sometimes they get so close and go, yeah, and the whole thing falls apart. Or they get so close, they've been letting go so wonderfully, and then they go and do something. Shut up, for goodness sake. It's working. Just carry on. Just be in the present moment. Be peaceful. Be kind. Just be gentle. And that nimitta will stay there. And as it stays, you will get more and more stable. But one thing about the nimittas which I figured out by myself is sometimes the nimitta would move back and forth. And I wonder, what's going on? How can I keep this still? Until one day I think I was shaving in the mirror. And I noticed my head was moving backwards and forwards in the mirror. And I realized, hey, now I know why that nimitta is moving. Because me, the one who's watching, was moving. So if the watcher, the observer, was absolutely still, then the nimitta will be still. Just like when I was shaving in the mirror. If I moved, the image in the mirror moved. If I was perfectly still, the image in the mirror was still. That's how I learn how to still the nimittas. The observer had to be totally still. And this light became still. And the next thing which happened, which is the, was it, ninth, tenth, 11th stage of the Anapanasati, is to allow this nimitta to get brighter and brighter and brighter and more powerful. Now this is a really juicy part. Actually there's many more juicy parts, but this really starts to get very good fun. These are the times where the thought comes up, came up in my mind a couple of times. I can't take so much pleasure. I'm going to burst with sheer ecstasy. But there's one thing I can tell you. There's no limit to the amount of pleasure you can feel in this part of meditation. You don't burst. You can always take more. bliss. That's really good fun. You're really having the greatest time of your life when these nimbus get very powerful. Incredible bliss. Sometimes they're so light you think you're going to go blind. But you don't, you're not seeing this with your eyes. This is your mental image. So when these things happen, yeah, this is really good stuff. These are the sorts of experiences which do change your life. Which you've never had so much peace and bliss before, ever. And you understand why we meditate. Something is going on here which is incredible. And you're actually experiencing it. This is not just some theory. Not just something you have to believe from a book. It's something which you, right here, experience. Wow. But we've only just begun. Because after that, the mind gets totally released from the body. I don't mean like floating outside. I mean just you can't feel anything anymore. You can't hear. Even if somebody shouted in your ear, "Hey, it's time for lunch," you would not hear anything. You're totally inside the mind. Those are the jhana states. And that's a different type of bliss, even more refined. That is the 12th stage of Anapanasati. This is, in Buddhism, called Samma Samadhi, the eighth factor of the Eightfold Path. It's not just for the sake of bliss you do these things. You get incredible insights afterwards, which I'll talk about later, how this works, why this is important. But for the meantime, just for the sheer fun of it, give it a try and see what happens. And you don't ever need to be afraid of these things. They're powerful. The reason why people do get afraid is because you're totally out of control. You can't do anything. That's the whole point of letting go. So you get out of the way and these things happen. But they are perfectly safe. In fact, they're better than safe. You know, you hear all sorts of things like tumors and cancers and cataracts and goodness knows what else. All those things just disappear. I don't know why. But I've seen it too many times. So it's incredibly healthy. And you're totally safe. You have the time of your life. And the deepest spiritual experiences. It's all positive, 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 every which way. So please don't be afraid. Let go. This is an important teaching in meditation. That as you get deeper and deeper in meditation, you have to let go more and more. And it gets more and more scary. The more of a control freak you are in life, the harder it is to meditate. Because you really have to totally let go. And there comes a point, I don't feel comfortable letting go anymore. Because I'm not sure, I'm not in control, I'm afraid. And the only way to overcome that fear, yeah, by listening to monks like me, being there, done that, and I can totally recommend, it's perfectly safe, in fact, it's a wonderful thing to achieve. You will never regret it. But what really gets you through is the sheer pleasure of it. I remember early on, I know I can't go further, it's just too much, I'm too afraid. But it's just so nice. No, you can't do that. It's really scary. But it looks really, really, really nice. No, I can't do it. But. It's a pleasure pulls you over. It's just so wonderful, you can't resist it. And this is not being indulgent. This is the nature of the mind. We'll always go to what is pleasurable. You try that at lunch today. I challenge you, anyone here, to choose the food you hate the most and eat it. Can you do that? No. I want to choose the food I like. It's the nature of the mind. You can't stop it. Well, you can actually work with it. So you work with this mind so that it's so beautiful, you just go that little bit extra, past fear, a little bit more letting go. And you realize, why was I hanging on to all this stuff? It just stopped me blissing out. Why even small meditation? Why do I keep holding on to the past and the future, for goodness sake? It's absolutely ridiculous, it's crazy. Once you see it, you think, I am an idiot hanging on to all of this. I don't need to, I'm just torturing myself. Why am I giving myself such a hard time? So when you actually let go of things, you realize just how easy it is to let go and how stupid it is to keep carrying all these things, controlling, holding on to things, just to let go and be free. But because we've never done that before, it's just the same as the prisoner who's been in jail, not the nice jails like Cardiff, which lets you come and see a Friday night talk, or lets you come and to listen to meditation talks when you're supposed to be working. Hi, at the back. One of the people up from Cardiff doing some jobs here. But oh, the really tough jails. Been in there 20, 30, 40 years. And when you get released, even though it's a really difficult place, you're too afraid to go out that gate. People who've been in jail for many years are afraid of freedom. Just like many of you will be afraid of freedom. Of walking out of that gate of the body so you can't feel it anymore. Getting into the beautiful nimittas, oh yeah. It's fearful, but it's worth it. So give it a try. When that happens, always be careful of excitement and fear. When they're the two things which stop you going further. And it's overcome mostly just by joy. So this is actually how the breath meditation works. Now I will also say, I'll reinforce this with another simile later on. You don't go from one stage to another stage. You go in to the next stage, never on to the next stage. So I said all these different stages of meditation. Present moment awareness, silence, watching the breath, the full awareness of the breath, calming the breath down, having joy and happiness with the breath, a delightful breath, softening that breath down till the breath disappears, nimittas coming up, then getting into the next stage, which is the jhanas. Every next stage is right within the stage you're in now. So you've got you, this being, right sitting in front of me. Inside of that is the present moment. Inside the present moment is silence. Inside of silence is your breath. Inside of the breath is the full awareness of the breath. Inside of the full awareness of the breath is the delightful breath. Inside of the delightful breath, right in the middle, you see these beautiful lights. Inside of those beautiful lights is the first jhana. Inside of the first jhana is the second jhana. You go in, right to the very center. Now it is an important teaching because you never give up the stage you're at now. You say, I've done this long enough, away, now go to the next stage. No, stay where you are. Be more fully where you are. Be really right in the center of where you are. And that's where you get into the next stage. You never push this aside to go to something else. The next stage is within the one you're in now. And if you follow this path, wow, you have a happy time. And just like I said last night, that King Pasenadi, one of the Buddha's chief lay disciples, he said, I always like coming to this monastery because the monks are always happy and smiling. And if my teachings are worth anything, can you follow them? People like visiting Jhana Grove because all the meditators here are all happy and smiling. And in fact, in the old days where we used to take these group photographs, we would never ever take the group photograph at the end of the retreat. Because at the end of the retreat, people who came to my retreat, that's when they always look sad. That's, I'm leaving, I don't want to go. In most retreats though, they take the photograph at the end of the retreat. And everyone is smiling. You know why they're smiling? Not because they've had good meditation, they're smiling because now they're going to go home. That's not a good time to have the photograph. So the best way of seeing how the meditation is going is how much you're smiling in the middle of the retreat. if the meditation is working, you're getting happier and happier and happier. And that's how it works. That's what got me involved in this meditation business and made me a monk. This was just the happiest I've ever felt. Continues to be that way. It's amazing. You can have a religion, a real solid path, which is just happiness here and now, rather than having to wait until you go to heaven. It's very so you don't know whether you get the right religion. It's like backing your horse in the Melbourne Cup, you don't know which one's going to win. You can't know which one's going to win until afterwards. That's really, really scary. All these different religions, they promise, no, this is the only way to heaven, no, this is the only way to heaven. At least with this path, you can actually get into heaven right now. So if it doesn't work on this retreat, you can change your religion afterwards. And it's not too late. But, my God, it works. And so many people have come on these retreats and got really, really blissed out. Be so happy. May that be you. So you know what to do. Don't aspire, don't try and get these things. I just told you what's going to happen. So simple. Present moment awareness, silence. Let the breath come up. Focus on the breath. Gently, always with peace, with kindness, not with force, until the breath just stays. And look for its delight. That's something I'm going to ask you to do, because too many people in our Western world are so negative. You've actually been conditioned to be negative, to be afraid of happiness. So much so, someone's already asked me for this. When I taught a retreat in Frankfurt, you were on that retreat in Frankfurt, were you? Recently, that I told somebody, because they were having a hard time, and when they started to get some peace in, and happiness in meditation, they thought there was something wrong. They thought they didn't deserve to be happy because, you know, they had some guilt trip or something. So I told them, I said, okay, I will give you a happiness certificate. I did this on the letterhead paper. I got letterhead from the temple I was teaching in. And I printed it out very neatly. Happiness license. I hereby grant, and I said the name, and I wrote the name out nice and neatly, permission to be happy for any reason or for no reason at any time, signed Ajahn Brahm. And I presented it to this person. And the head monk of this temple saw that, and after about half an hour, about 50 other people wanted one as well. So I printed out a whole 50 and had to sign all these happiness certificates. And someone put it on Facebook, and then followers, you know, from, I think it was from Malaysia, they wanted a whole heap as well. And why do you need a certificate to be happy, for goodness sake? But if you want one, I'll give you one. Because we're very negative people. And when we start to get happy, we think, something must be wrong. No, no, this can't be right. You mean, you know, meditation, you could bliss out and have fun? Well, that can't be right. So no, this is what happens. And you deserve it. Go for it. And when it happens, just enjoy it to the max. It's good for you. And you know, it gives me so much happiness. You know, when somebody comes along and they, for an interview, they start smiling and crying. Oh, what a bomb. Oh, it's so wonderful. Oh, yes. And that's what I really like most of all. You know, it's like, the only thing I can describe it by is like, you know, when you have this young person, they fall in love for the first time, and they come and say, oh, Mum, I found this wonderful guy, he's just so wonderful, oh, I'm in love. You know, it's like really sweet, you know, it's like cute. And that's whatever, they just get into deep meditation for the first time. Oh, I jump out, it's so nice, it's so lovely, oh. I really enjoy that. So please, make me happy. You go and bliss out to the max. And that's great for your health, great for your psychology, and great for your understanding of what this Buddhism is all about. It's so easy to do. Just let go and let it happen. Any questions? Oh yeah, go on.
How
Oh, because when you get excited, it ruins it.
I understand, but how is it possible to experience this and see it coming and then...
Oh, because so many times you realize, I'm going to get excited, and you know it's going to all fall apart. You've done that too many times. And you think, look, if I get excited, I'm spoiling it. So, get excited later, but not now. So after a while, it's just the bliss again, it's just too much. And you say, no, I'm not going to get, I'm going to enjoy this. Because you know excitement will just spoil it all. So it depends on how smart you are. If you're really a dum-dum, you keep getting excited again and 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 again. And come on, enjoy it. So say, no, I'm not going to get excited. You just say no to excitement. And just say yes to the bliss. You don't have both. After a while you can do that. There's little techniques which I can say later on. Just, you know, how you can condition yourself, train yourself not to be excited. So just to allow the bliss to happen. But a lot of times the excitement is just an expression of the main problem, which is fear. Fear to let things go. Because you're out of control. And people just, you know, you can let go so much, but you want a bit of control over your life, and control over your body, and especially control over your mind. And all that goes away. No control at all. It's pretty scary stuff. But it's so liberating and so happy. No one's going to take over when you're gone. You're just going to have a great time. You're out of jail. Woohoo! Unfortunately, you go back to jail again afterwards. It's only parole, but it's still pretty good stuff. Okay, yeah?
What happens to the nimitta in jhana?
Nimitta, it just gets overcome by the bliss. Basically, just perceiving the bliss of the jhana. And the perception of a light has just vanished.
It's not around.
Not around anymore. You don't know when these things disappear, because the memory part is not really active during the meditation. You're just really blissed out, so still. It's only afterwards you can examine what was going on. And realize, you know, there's no nimitta there, it's just what you're aware of was the different types of bliss. Okay, so there we go. I hope it got you motivated. So, you got a choice now. You can actually go and have a nap, or you can go and get pissed out. I don't think you're going to take a nap. So, see what happens.